great to be back at Ovale. I was here in 2011 with Geraldine Mills, so it's awesome. And I'll tell you, that five-word challenge, that is the best, isn't it? So great. What a great idea. I do a lot of writing workshops, and I'm always like looking for things that get people stimulated to write, so it's awesome. And the stuff that you came up with, terrific. Absolutely terrific. So keep doing it. It's really great. I want to start, it's kind of like, I don't know if it's my tradition or it's the tradition I'm just doing this minute. I was going to start with something new, and then I'll read from Necessary Silence, which is really kind of hot off the press. It launched in the United States in March, but it launched here in Ireland just days ago at Kenny's in Galway. So it's kind of hot off the press here. So this is new. This is not in any collection yet. So it's just kind of, that's what we keep doing, is we keep reinventing what we do. Let's call it refreshment. And this actually did come out of a writing activity. So don't ever think, you know, really cool stuff can come out of writing activities. Outside the window, the yellow warbler reads drops of rain, unearths the scent of worms with her beak. She's rooting in dirt for a mid-morning pick-me-up, while you wait for the barista with a tattoo of a goatee on his chin to plunk a dollop of frothed milk on your organic cappuccino. Demitasse, that you'll drink standing up like they do in Venezia, where you spent a semester wandering around Piazza San Marco. Mi scusi, you'd say to a leggy girl in sunglasses, and you'd ask directions to a place you had no intention of going, hoping she'd take you somewhere better. Once, it led to sex in her appartamento. Later, the two of you sitting cross-legged on her bed, drinking vino, eating crusty bread and olives. It didn't matter that your Italian was as bad as her English. Her tongue said like that. Your hands improvised a tango on her breasts, and you thought, for 5 minutes, or maybe a night, that it would be great to marry someone who couldn't speak your language. Which is something you would think at 20. Like the yellow warbler, who right now is not communicating with song, but with grubs, soft and pliant, pressed into 7 open beaks. So just, you know, different place than I was going for this. And but since I started kind of flippant, I'll go to kind of flippant. I'll stay with that for a little while before I go into the dark. And this is the first poem in the book. It's called Hidden. He says to her, "The way you wear your hair makes me feel younger." She just likes the bother of it. Thick robe heavy on her neck. But he asks for so little that she keeps it until the drudgery becomes the same as other monotonous tasks. Grocery shopping, washing clothes. Weighed down, she can't swim or run. Looks at other women with short hair. Men track them with their eyes. A friend tells her he likes her hair better short, much better. She begins to think she doesn't exist. She is a hank of hair. She remembers running fingers through the lightness of short curls. Now he sees her unbuttoned and terrified. They will die in fewer years than they have lived, and yet it doesn't make them safer or more comfortable. He says to her, "I wish I had known you when you were younger. This is what I imagined." She says, "You imagined wrong." I don't know where this came from. It's called The Inadequacies of Language. Sometimes it's better not to introduce it because I really don't know where it came from. Vinny tried to seal yesterday's laceration with Cecilia's mouth, put a quarter in the jukebox. Nothing happened. Then a 68-year-old Italian woman saw the Blessed Virgin in the crinkled bark of an oak, heralded the miracle on cardboard, soon a sodden lump in September rain. No words for heat that rises above conifers, shrouding needles in vapor. I knew someone who hung out with the wrong crowd, pulled in a girl with one line, face on her driver's license, not her own. See the specter of light coming into view? I can just make out the edges. Keep expecting something to pop out at me. Diana galloping on her steed, or the plump elderly couple in all of us whose picture doesn't match our desires. Somebody introduced me at the lunch, and they said that that I read a lot of dark stuff, but I always have this reductive love thing going on.
Maybe I do.
You be the judge. This poem actually came out of, I stayed in a bed and breakfast in Ireland some years ago. I've been to Ireland a number of times, and there was the ugliest chandelier I've ever seen in my whole life. I mean, this was hideous, really hideous. And the woman who owned the place was so nice because she said, it was very noisy, and she said, you know, if you want to work, you can go in this room and work, and this was the room with the bad chandelier. So I did work in there. I was quite grateful. It's also the only place I could get internet. But then I started thinking about it. I figured it had something to teach me, which is what we writers do, right? We just have to make something out of everything. So it's called Love's Bad Taste. I am in love with the metal grapes hanging from the chandelier. Not that they are beautiful or even classic, but that they dare to be purple in a room of somber tones. That's where love comes in, collapsing into raucousness in a back pew, because life just fills us and we can't help but spill over. Which is why I told you that falling in love is important, and not just for the heady, happy in your skin feeling, but so you know why you're here. And it isn't to tally numbers on a page or even give time away. It is to collapse into someone's arms. You know you want to go running down that corridor. Like suddenly there's a reason for broken windows, boring orders. And as long as you can have a few minutes a day sitting or walking together, you understand the smudged mural and the rundown part of town. It approaches perfection. Try finding anything that would ask so much with no guarantees, make you grope for a light switch in suffocating darkness, change your wardrobe, or buy a garish chandelier, because it's possible to love imperfection, necessary. All right, I'm on the love note, huh? Before I get to the dark note. I wrote a wedding poem once, and it really unleashed this wave of everybody thinking I was like the wedding writer, which is really bad, because it's not so easy to write wedding poems. And I have to tell you that most of them were terribly bad. And this was the only one that really took, and it won an award, so it's really the only one you'll ever see, because the rest of them really were just terrible. It's hard to do. It's very hard to do. But this is called What Lovers Know. And I did read it at the wedding, and it was in a magazine after that, so it was just kind of my lucky wedding poem, the only one. Touch, as if her rounded shoulder is an amber moon glowing under your fingertips. Listen to her voice as she moves toward you in the mountain of night. Your hands are stars that she will draw inside until you're both hot with brightness. Lay down memory for this flash across reason. You will call for her eyes and ragged ears as if they were children gathered round to comfort you. What you share cannot be undone by age or sorrow. Her name, her curtain of soft hair, remains within, turning like her whisper towards you. In the eventual darkness, this will be what matters. So I was in Seattle once. My daughter lives near Seattle, and she's quite a bicyclist. And she said, we're just going to take a little bike ride. It's no big deal. It was a big deal. It was like 30 miles. I thought I was going to die. I really thought I was going to die. For her, that's like nothing. But while we were doing this supposed little bike ride, we passed these little girls that were perched in a tree, and they actually, that's where this, you know, poems come from everywhere, as we all know. And they actually said the line in this poem, which I just thought was just incredible. So you'll hear. It's called Little Girls in Trees. Perched in the crook of a maple tree, two little girls with autumn-colored hair, summer pauses and late bedtimes in their voices. The smaller one said, "Let's ask each other three questions." When I passed on my bicycle, they assumed the posture of animals who intuit staying still will render them invisible. In the sycamore tree of my girlhood backyard, I would swing, listen to the moan made by wind before rain, scrape fingernails against bark. Now, I'm prone to thinking I can tame anyone with soup or conversation, but this isn't truth. I remember questions I once had. Where did Grandma go? Why does it hurt? When no one told me, I made up answers. In the trees, breezes are soft hands. Little girls with autumn-colored hair scamper off to unseen families, and I ride the path as if I know the ruts and turns where it all will end. That is just great. They actually said, "Let's ask each other three questions," and I really wish I knew the three questions. That's another poem, right? What the three questions were. Anonymity. His hands, gold as potatoes, wide-knuckled, unadorned. He could lower his voice to the whisper of clothes billowing, raise it like metal hitting glass. Her mother's eyes narrowed to slate. Peach roses edged with red overran a mowed yard, plagued by beetles every June. Slap of the breezeway door, grind of an attic fan. Clutching a new pencil box and lace-edged cotton socks and Mary Jane's, she smiled in response to whiskey or cheese, gave thanks at the lifespan of a table. It's the body that finally remembers drowning in the open eye of the camera. What she's here for, silent history, no names, no dates. I told you I'd get darker. I promised. It happens. New skin. In spring, balls of seedlings dropped like hope in the russet clearing of my yard. I collect them dutifully. They were both hard and soft, like the sting of a hand against 8-year-old skin. Under the craggy tree, I pile them like tiny cannons, gather spreading leaves and walk on their regular surface. I can still feel the snugness of my PF flyers. Blood on the bark mottled like a Jackson Pollock where my small fists tightened and struck. Each rain gave me fresh surface. Now I look at my unbroken hands, think of Georgia O'Keeffe, shrug an offering of open petals. Every spring, the rain comes pelting, inviting me to grow new skin. The price. You tell me you're afraid to die alone. It makes you think of some nameless woman tied to a chair, calling the name of someone she used to love, someone who sent her white roses, braided her thick brown hair, and carried groceries in from the car. He cannot hear her, passed his own threshold years ago, and she's alone with the food tray, the drooping nurse. Love is more than lines from letters saved, but fear is a potent overseer, ordering you into dark corners. Everyone dies alone, unfettered, surrounded by a manageable satin sky that is uncovered one star at a time. So in 2005, I was on a trip taking my mother-in-law on her, the thing that she most wanted, which was to go to Italy. And while I was there, this is not all poems are based on true stories. You all know this because you're poets. Stuff I make up, stuff is from my imagination, whatever, or people I've worked with. But this is actually based on a true story because my father actually had a massive cerebral hemorrhage while I was in Italy. So, and I juxtaposed that real event with stories that were emerging about whales that were beaching themselves on Cape Cod. So it's called Beached. Men spilled from trucks with pulleys and ropes, dozens and dozens of men in spring dusk. A coma, my sister said, crackling over transatlantic lines. Doctors said there was nothing to do but wait. Two whales hunkered on a far-off shore, barnacled skin drying. Why did they heave onto land, lie prone near sidewalking crabs and sandpipers? I've never felt this small or alone. The sky, a complicated mass of gray purple clouds, ducks with iridescent heads rooting in shallows. The whales looked as if they belonged, sunning themselves, glimmer shadows on massive backs. At least one life would be saved before nightfall. I like to, it's kind of my signature to have one form poem in every collection, and I don't know why I do that. It's really kind of bizarre, but I seem to do it. So I started that with my first book, and now I feel compelled to continue it. So, and I usually break it a little, you know, like don't follow the form completely strictly, because I so resist following any form completely strictly. It's just my personality to rebel. So this is called Enclosure, and it's mostly a pantoum. Which is a very cool form that works on repetition. It works very well with haunting material. Enclosure. Stalwart trees guard my neighborhood at night, like the stockade fence that lined my childhood yard. Once the town was narrow, cold with fight, the bark of birch and oak pitted and scarred. A stockade fence lined my childhood yard. Some things I reach for is as if to finally clutch the bark of birch and oak pitted and scarred. The careless stars above look close enough to touch. Some things I reach for as if to finally clutch. I hum when I'm alone on winter days. The careless stars above look close enough to touch. Variegated warmth, the open hearth ablaze. I hum when I'm alone on winter days. Outside the gray in a parade of contrast. Variegated warmth, the open hearth ablaze. A scrape of branches clawing at the glass. Outside the gray in a parade of contrast. In the thaw of March you gave me roses. A scrape of branches clawing at the glass. Sudden blooming, fragrance of proposal. In the thaw of March you gave me roses. My father walked me down the summer aisle. Sudden blooming, fragrance of proposal. Pewter vase, thorn, blossom, and beguile. The space between maples frames the sky. Once the town was narrow, cold with fight. Unbroken blue and white, my alibi. Stalwart trees guard my neighborhood at night. Really a fun form. If you look it up, I think my students are always amazed at how good their poems come out doing that form. It really is great. I had this challenge that I gave myself to write a memoir in like a one-page poem. So this is my memoir. A swollen cloud marked your sixth year. Eight gave you a wink of a scar and a friend who moved to England, foreign as a parrot. Fireplace next to slap. Ache kept company with ignore. The story had a morning, an open window. You walked through the gate to find a tarred road, grim sun. Hidden behind a door in a room called later, decades of longing, beginnings with braided hair streaming. You kept the sea for its ability to block out everything, odoriferous and noisy, as a shunned relative you secretly loved. When you moved to a cacophony of seasons, there were 18 flowering azaleas and thousands of words in a sky-colored suitcase that you had to sit on to close. So, I don't know how I'm doing on time. Have you bored you? I'll read you an Ireland poem. It's called In Galway. I have watched rain write its name on dark streets and stone walls, as if to plant something soundlessly in the crevices, with an outpouring that might warn or heal. Rain is a haze and patter, stippling sidewalks, crowds shrouded under umbrellas. I am not afraid to be drenched or to wail like wind. It's the discarded nuance of gray I'm after, and the corrid, haunting, flinty streets until traffic slows, day curves into night, and rain tells a story of death and seeds, how everything must change to come into its gleaming. I happen to like the rain. I know. It's here a lot, right?
A couple more, I think.
Yeah,
a couple
more. Yeah. Okay. Yes, you're okay? You're not falling asleep yet? Symmetry. Have you ever thought of leaving one life, stepping into another? The way a shale cloud becomes a heron. Sometimes clouds wear faces, scowling or breaking into radiance, like the open hand of a pasture dotted with violets. Each landscape has within itself a perfect symmetry, limpid shell and leaf, placid sheep that graze without a moment given over to becoming a magpie or clam. The sky shifts again and the ocean drains itself. See how sun on water is green with flecks of sweet, a baritone border. How crabs scuttle to find moisture in pockets of sand, and light skitters across every surface. All right, one more. Okay, I'm going to end with the last poem of the collection, which I just got to read at a graduation of an art school where I used to work, which was really fun. I was a speaker for a graduation my first time, and I ended with this poem. It's called Possible Island. The sky flings open, and a flock of grackles dizzy the broad pasture. I imagine the first surge in the field of dawn, drip of sunlight cracking open the barn door. Days like this, I hold my breath for something to leap out with 100 inky wings, scarred beaks that swallow air. My life, hips, belly, fingers, fertile enough, inhaling what this is. The dark silk of the sea. Across stone walls by winterberry and dogwood, a soaking wind, sharp as bones. I bring myself to every island with its mossy logs and whelks, a dinghy somewhere waiting. Thank you.